You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my good friend, Inelia Benz, returns. Inelia came in for the first time here to assist with raising the vibration of the planet. In January 2010, she was asked by Source to go public to promote the message of empowerment and sovereignty to the masses. She came out publicly as a messenger of personal and global ascension. She has done weekend events, creates tools for use on her website, www.ineliabenz.com, has a personal website for those who want to be empowered more directly at www.walkwithmenow.com, and she has just released her ninth book after the very successful interview series, which began with Interview with an Alien, continued with Interview with a Psychic Assassin. Her latest book is called The Return, which explores the interactions of various alien races that have an interest in our planet, and in particular, one person. I wonder who that person could be. So let's welcome Inelia to the show now. Hi, Inelia, how are you?
Hi, Lance.
Hi.
That's a lovely introduction, thank you.
Always. You're always so busy doing things and writing books, and I can hardly keep up with them.
It's true.
So, do you want to talk a little bit about your new latest book so that people can find out what they can be inspired to get it and read it?
Yes. This book was inspired by certain events that have happened throughout my life, but also individuals and entities that I've had interactions with. Also, with regards to the history of our species, I wanted to air what I have seen or perceived and learned about what it means to be a human being, and also what kind of interactions or effects other species have had. A lot of people put a lot of attention or think that the Anunnaki were the people who created humans when they weren't. And so the book goes a little bit into that. It's like it's going to be a trilogy, at least three books, at least a trilogy. And it's going to explore our nature, where we came from, where we're going, and the effects that other species have had on us. The book mainly deals with three species. One of them is a human species. Another one is the Anunnaki. And another one, it is a reptilian species called the Rumni.
Huh.
And there's like the different interactions between them and what they know about what's happening here on the planet. And the one person in particular that they're interested in, the book is called The Return. And the name is basically looking at how many people on the planet are presently having returned from other collectives that mm-hmm. left when the light-dark experiment began, or at some point within it, and now are returning both singularly but also as collectives. And they're coming back and remembering their previous experiences and also remembering their innate skills and abilities and other things that we're bringing back into the human collective now that we've taken a decision to have a higher frequency experience here. So the person that the book talks about basically represents everybody who is returning or has returned to the planet.
So,
A little summary for you.
And as I understand it, that's quite a few people, because there have been waves of, the new kids or the new energy coming in for over 100 years.
Yes.
And, many of the people who are listening are, in my age bracket, which is in the 60s, and we came in some of those first waves and have been continuing to come in until now. And Mary Rodwell just came out with a new book that talks about the new kids, and they're openly discussing their what they remember, which is their previous incarnations on other star systems. And the one story that I thought was interesting was when one of these kids was talking about his job as some kind of high advanced technological worker. And Mary asked him to describe what he did, and he looked at her and said, "Oh, you wouldn't understand."
Yeah, but it's not just the children, like you said, you know, like it's over 100 years now. And I've traced the first wave of returnees, which was pretty small, but they kind of started opening the gates here on the planet in the 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people from the 1800s having a lot of, the books were written and a lot of things about spirituality and levitation and telekinesis and growth, spiritual growth and things like that. You know, they kind of started then. The very first few manifestation books, one of them was from, I think it was from the late 1800s or very early 1900s. There's a couple of them, like the one that's called A Man Thinketh, As a Man Thinketh, I think.
What's the name of it?
And there's another manifestation book. I can't remember the name of it now.
Oh, geez.
But it's good, like the... Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. So, you know, the first few waves started then and they have been continuing. Now what I see is different is that the people are coming in. Until now, people felt really lonely and alone on the planet. They felt that they didn't belong. But now they're finding their collective mate, you know,
right.
People and friends who could come in from the same collectives that left together. And they're coming in big time now. And these people, these individuals, from the 1940s, 1930s, you know, even them from the 1920s, and it seems to be accelerating. There's a whole bunch of individuals who are now between the ages 70 and 20, and even younger, like 10-year-olds who are far from the same collective as each other, and are getting to meet each other and starting to remember what it was all about, you know. So that's pretty exciting, I think.
Well, yes, I remember I had a friend that was writing all kinds of metaphysical articles, and he was in his 80s at the time, and he eventually passed, but he would talk about how lonely it had been because he thought he was the only person that was having these thoughts. And, you know, he was really kind of out on a ledge all by himself. And so that is not the case anymore. And we're not alone, and we have a lot of help. And what do you see as, well, we need a lot of help because look at the state of the control system, which is kind of running things at the moment.
Right, right.
So if there is going to be a paradigm shift, and there will be, it seems that a lot of things have to break down and be dissolved before we can actually have the kind of experience that we would find most enlightening.
Right. I think that one of the key aspects of it is that each individual basically starts embodying that new paradigm. It doesn't like happen outside of ourselves, right? We've had this conversation before, I'm sure.
Right.
And so it's not something that's happening or that's coming, but something that actually you can make happen within your own life, right? Be really diligent and, you know, interact with high frequency individuals and drop low frequency people and situations and really make conscious choices, you know, mm-hmm. of how you want to live your life, how you want to live it day by day, moment by moment.
Absolutely. It's almost like when I got so involved with the different conspiracy facts that have come out over the years that it can become an obsession to look outside yourself and imagine that it's a hopeless world.
Right.
And then I began to realize that, you know, I don't have to look at that. And by not paying any attention to it, you're actually uncreating something. That if you're not holding it in your field of intention, that it literally isn't there.
Yeah, and also there's a difference between ignoring something and actually looking at it, but not engaging at their frequency,
mm-hmm.
right? Mm-hmm. Like there's stuff that's generating in you kind of feelings of righteousness or anger or fear. Then you deal with those energies. You deal with your own righteousness. You deal with your own anger and your own fear.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at it and you say, whoa, you know, that had a lot of power over me, but it doesn't anymore. It doesn't have power over me anymore. And, you know, you can actually take actions and change it, but it's not the same as it was before. Before you were engaging at their frequency. Now you've moved on and now you can engage at your frequency. Yeah?
Right, right. How do you see so many varying realities that are being created? And as you know, those who control the money and the purse strings and the technological strings have certain ideas about what they would like to have happen. And how do you see these disparate views working themselves out together?
Well, I see it as an aspect of there's a tool that I use, you know, and I teach people that happens on the planet all the time. I mean, we do it all the time. If you think about cell phones, for example, when the 60s came along and there was a Star Trek series and they have cell phones and everybody used to think that was never going to happen, you know. Now everybody has a cell phone on the planet. So somebody dreams it up and then you think it and you imagine it and it's a daydream thing. You can daydream anything. So you can daydream free energy. You can daydream a different, completely different system of energy exchange that is not dependent on any type of money, for example, or bits or whatever you want to call it. It's completely different. And a different type of society. You can play with it. You can have 20 minutes a day of daydreaming this perfect whatever that you have your attention on. And the more people you recruit to have the same daydream with you, mm-hmm. it comes to a point where suddenly you start seeing it reflected on society. And before you know it, boom, right, it's right there. Mm-hmm. I remember years ago, we had a conversation where we were talking about how, oh my God, there's this cereal by, I don't remember who it was, Kellogg's, I think, that said GMO-free, you know, no GMO. And we couldn't believe it. It's like, are you serious? Is this really happening, you know? And now you go to the store and it's everywhere, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned cell phones, and of course, some of my guests have been talking quite a bit about the dangers of the new 5G network, which is apparently being rolled out in other countries before they bring it here, but there's enough evidence to show that it's something that's going to be quite damaging if it gets up and running. How do we look at things like that seem to be inevitable, and how do we deal with those situations?
Well, I can only tell you how I deal with it.
Okay.
So, you know, it's like there's that allowance of, let's use Oxycontin for painkiller, and then years later there's 10 billion people addicted to heroin, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when it came out, oh, don't worry, it's not addictive, it's perfectly fine, let's give it to everybody. So there was like a layer of lying to the population. But you have to be really, really unconscious for that to affect you, for that to come through. Now one might say, well, you know, the 5G is different because it affects everybody, right? So everybody, don't go to the doctor and say, no, it's right there. And it's really amazing because when these things come along, if enough people start looking at it, even enough conscious people start looking at it without judgment, without righteousness, one or two things will happen. One of them is that the technology is manifested in a harmless way, that it doesn't cause any harm. And the other way is that it doesn't manifest at all and something else manifests instead. So that's one of the things to look at, right? That technology in and of itself is not harmful, but the intents or the ways that people have been using it or the frequency that have been used are not so healthy, because then it makes a lot of money for the health industry and other things. So things are coming up to be looked at, things are coming up to be seen, just like the Me Too campaign, you know. A few years ago, that stuff was invisible or considered normal, but now it's not. You know, it's neither invisible and it's not considered normal. It just happened like overnight. Yeah. For some people, they might say, well, I was fighting for that for decades, you know. And for the rest of, but it kind of took off, you know, it's like, there was a fire going and a sparkle going, and then suddenly you just had this explosion around the world. And the human collective works like that a lot. So if you want to set seeds into the human collective of what you want to happen, just daydream them and talk about it in an empowering way, not in a disempowering way. Because if you think about it as in, these bastards, excuse my French, they're going to be harming everybody and there's nothing we can do about it, that's exactly what you're telling them to do. Right? And the permission that you're giving them, you're giving them that permission. But if you look at it and you say, hey, you know, we can totally change this. We can make this a completely harmless technology. And, or that is actually, it can't happen because we're such an amazingly powerful collective, the human collective, that is never going to allow this to happen nowadays. It's going to change it, right?
Well, I know there was a very good example of that, which I think you brought up in the false flag events that were occurring and have been occurring for a few decades. And one of them was Sandy Hook. And what the information that came out was that some of the false flags actually had, there were people that were killed. And in one of the more recent ones, nobody had died, and yet they were shown as being shot and dead and the rest of it. And I think I asked you about that, and you said, well, if the collective doesn't agree with it, it can't happen.
Right. Right.
And yet we still
remember when you say, when you go into it with anger, say, that mustn't happen, you know, these bastards did this, then you're giving them permission.
Giving them permission.
We have to remember one of these things. Like, when you say the word, you know, people say humans are this and that, and there's a lot of people teaching out there that humans are terrible, they're nasty and horrible. Because they're not.
No.
Think about the word humane, right? What does humane mean?
Right. Well, you know, and there's also the view that seems to come from channeled information mainly, which I don't read anymore, but the kind of an attitude that comes in from other ET groups, the Pleiadians and the, you know, various other groups that look down on us. And, of course, the Anunnaki and the more reptilian sides definitely have a view about us being, you know, worthless eaters. But you know, we don't really know for sure how that is all going to fall out. And it sounds like your book is exploring some of these ideas.
Yes. One of the things that I want to explore in this series is how we came to be. There is a local legend here where I live. I live up in Northwest Washington in an Indian reservation. It's the Macaw Reservation. And there is a legend in one of the nearby tribes that talked about the Sasquatch. Now, I like to talk about the Sasquatch as being real because among all the Native American people here, they're not a theory. They're real, and they've had interactions with them for many, many generations. One of the legends nearby said that when the gods came down from heaven to give people souls, the Sasquatch tribe decided not to turn up, right? So they ended up with no souls. And that meant that the other tribes became a bit embarrassed about them because they were very primitive and they didn't use words. You know, they didn't have the same type of culture anymore that we do. Mm-hmm. Basically, among the people here, the Sasquatch are the most apt forest dwellers that are known to anyone. They can live in the forest, in the Olympic rainforest, but also all across the Americas, in Europe, South America, Central America, there's legends of the Sasquatch. And they do live in the wilderness, and they're amazing hunters, and they stay out of the way. Not many people have seen them anymore, but before there used to be a lot of interaction with them. There used to be trade with them and everything.
Huh.
And these days, there's a lot of people in this tribe who have seen them with their own eyes. They don't really talk about it because it's like saying, I saw a bear or a deer, you know.
It's not a big deal. Right.
But that story that I was telling you pinpoints something that is very specific to planet Earth, which is, where do we come from and why is there humans with souls now? You know, because they didn't have souls before. Not all of them. So there's a lot of different species taking part in the human experiment here. Everybody has a sense, since the beginning of our history, recorded history, that this planet was really special among all the planets. And that is true. And the book and the series is going to be investigating why. It's going to be telling why it's so interesting, it's so special. And it is.
Mm-hmm.
It really is.
Well, there certainly are a lot of questions that have gone unanswered, and you're talking about several of them now, where we came from, what our true history is, and, you know, about the blue planet, which is said to be, as you said, special, and, you know, and yet there are very few people out there exploring these ideas and actually providing tangible answers for it.
Right, yeah. But the answers are out there. And if you look for them, you will find them. But if you don't, I mean, even if you don't, just buy my book, books and you'll start seeing the
right.
answer.
Right, right.
Yeah. Because I do talk about that stuff, and The Return is definitely going to explore all of that, the trilogy.
Well, now, how long have you been up in Washington State, and how is the Shaman Shack coming along?
Oh, yeah, I've been up here like nearly 4 years now, I think 4 years in October, November, something like that.
Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? Time flies.
And you have
I was just thinking about your birthday and thinking, oh my gosh, you know, we're so far away, you know, who's going to celebrate cake and stuff? Yeah, it's nearly 4 years. And the Shaman Shack is really amazing. It's a beautiful high frequency location. And we've had several retreats, and I also is the location where my mentorees would come to have personal instruction as part of their mentorship. And it's quite extraordinary, actually, because one of the things we've noticed is that if a low-frequency individual comes into the property, they don't last. They're very long. Often, if, like, even for a few hours, they'll get really sick and have to leave. Or they come in and say, yeah, I don't really want to stay, and they leave, you know. So it's pretty fascinating, actually. I knew, I kind of had a feeling that was going to happen, but I never have actually seen it happen in, like, for real, like, real life, you know. It's totally, totally there. The frequency, the creation, and the manifestation that we had around it is very high frequency, and it's a high frequency engagement, a location where one is safe to have and be a high frequency person and not indulge in low frequency stuff, right? So, yeah, it's fascinating.
Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, there was a moment when I thought maybe we had one of those Skype interruptions. When Skype first came out of there, it seemed like it was almost nothing but dropping the line and interruptions and fading in and out. And it made an interview difficult, but they seem to have gotten a handle on some of that stuff.
Yeah, I think so.
So, you have, are you still using the houseboat?
Yes, I'm right there right now, actually.
Oh, wonderful.
We're on the houseboat right now. Yes.
Are you loving it?
Absolutely, yeah. It's such a beautiful, beautiful boat. It has a life and energy of her own, you know? We're still getting her fixed because, you know, she was pretty cheap but expensive. Because there's so many repairs that needed happening and the repairs are so expensive. But it's taken us all these, like, 3.5 years now, but we're getting there.
Well, yeah, it does take a while. I'm doing the same thing with my place. I mean, it's like, it seems it's going to take forever to get the place to the point where I, you know, it matches my vision and my dreams. But it's happening. I'm working towards that. So it's actually starting to kind of pull together.
Nice.
So the organic garden is coming along nicely. But everything seems to take much longer than it used to take. You know, when you're 67 years old and it's 85 or 90 degrees outside, my ability to stay out there is limited.
My gosh, it's so hot there, but it's not as hot as the valley, right? And Sacramento or whatever. Oh my gosh.
And then we actually had a bear break through the fence. There's wood fencing that goes around the property. And he came in through the organic garden, and the trash cans are kept on the back of a van just so that they can be taken to the spot where they're picked up, and he just broke the wood fence, came in, scattered everything to the winds, ate what he wanted, and left.
Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah, and I just fixed the fence, but unfortunately, once they know there's food there, then that automatically goes on their itinerary. They have itinerary, and they follow that. Whenever they, so I'm going to be one of the high points of the bear stops.
Oh, no.
And I was going to put bees back there, and they love bees. So if I do that, I'm going to have to figure out a way to keep the bees protected, either by raising them up high or putting them in the chicken shed.
Right.
So, I'll figure something out before. But I just have to have bees because I just love them.
Yeah, they're cool. Everything about them is cool.
Mm-hmm. So what else is going on up there with you and Larry?
Well, we're doing several projects. Well, on the Ilaria, we have 15 chickens. And it was really funny because we were tricked into getting chickens. Do you want to hear the story?
I don't think, I'm not sure.
You don't want to. You're not sure if you want to hear the story.
Oh yes, yes, I do. I'm still
anyway,
having trouble
what
hearing.
Was, Larry came home one day and he said there was some abandoned chickens. Somebody abandoned a whole flock of chickens by the side of the road, which we thought was horrible and terrible. And we waited and waited a few days thinking somebody was going to come over and rescue them. But on the fourth day, we decided, okay, we better rescue them. So we went into town to get chicken feed and try and figure out how to catch some chickens. And when we got to the feed store, we saw some baby chickens, and they were so cute.
Oh, they are, aren't they?
Yeah, so we got, I think we got nine of them. And on the way home, we went to rescue these chickens, but somebody had beaten us to it, and they rescued the chickens, so we didn't have to. So we got home with nine baby chickens.
Oh.
We set up and we looked after them. We were so happy. And then one day we wake up and one of them is dead. And I was so upset. I was super upset. And Larry said, don't worry about it. We're going into town today. I'll get you another one. So we went into town and then we got them and they still have babies. And of course we had to get four because, you know, in case another one dies, right?
Right.
So then we had 12 chickens. And then we avoided town as much as we could because the baby chickens were everywhere and there was no way that we could walk into a store with those beautiful little things and not get them. So we avoided them and the season was over. We waited another week after the season was over and then we went into town. We went to buy some plants like some herbs from an organic store. And then we went to pay for them and we walked into the store. And we could hear the baby chickens. And I went, no, you don't have baby chickens. And everybody in the store started laughing. It was, oh, we got another one. And I tried so hard not to buy any more, but it was too much. It was too much. So we bought four.
Oh, wow.
But I chose them and I started picking them. And then one of them, the last one, her life force was really weak, and I thought, this one's going to die, and I nearly put her back. And then I looked at her, and she looked at me, and I thought, oh, my gosh, you know, if I leave her here, she's going to die in this environment. That would be really horrible. So I thought, well, even though you're going to die, you're coming home with me. I'd rather you die in a really beautiful environment. So we took her home. She actually survived a lot longer than I thought. She lasted about 3 weeks or something.
Oh.
And her feathers started coming out and they were all over the place. I mean, she has something really wrong with her. And one day, one morning, we got there, we went into the coop and she was gone.
Aww.
So, you know, passed away. But the rest were very, very healthy and happy and they all have names. And people say, oh, why did you get them? You know, for feeding or eggs? I said, neither. They're just 12, 15 pets that eat a lot of bugs and eventually create eggs. But for us, they're just pets, you know. And my son, one of his chores every day is to cuddle the chickens.
Oh, yeah.
So there's four that we don't cuddle because they are a breed that is an old breed here in the United States. It's an heirloom breed that is really good because for free range especially. Because they're very wild, they're very hard to tame, and also they're like an alarm system. They detect everything, and they warn the flock. So we don't touch those four, but the rest, absolutely, everybody gets cuddles and treats and, you know, strawberries and cherries.
Wow!
And we buy actual treats, and they sell treats for your pet chickens that we really do. And so that's one of the things, you know, so it's been quite an adventure.
Well, I had a set of chickens a while back, and a friend gave me everything I needed, but they were already a little bit too big, and they had passed the age where they were cuddleable.
Aww.
And so I didn't get to get in that phase, and so I didn't really bond with them. So eventually I returned them to her, and she's still got the chickens. But I have thought about, since I built a chicken shed, I have thought about getting a whole new round of them, because if you can get them young enough, then you can pick them up and, you know, hold them and, just feel their life force and talk, communicate with them, and I love doing stuff like that. But we have foxes, and foxes love chickens.
And there
was a period of time when the fox got three of my cats and all of the chickens of my neighbor who had a chicken coop. So that kind of put a damper on that temporarily.
Yeah.
This does seem to be a world in which everything eats everything else, so everything's food for something.
I know, that is so true. Mm. We've looked at that because we have cougars, we have bears, we have coyotes, we have foxes, we have raccoons, we have everything that eats chickens, you know? So we looked up and basically you build a really strong coop and you lock them in every night. That's all. But, and in the day, we have the dogs, you know, in property. So far, so good. They haven't, coyotes have tried to come into the property and the dogs chase them away. But they can't get in the coop. And basically, reading up on it, it's like the only way to keep your chickens safe is to have a really secure coop and lock it every night.
Right,
so that's
right.
And in this area, you really have to, because otherwise, forget it.
Well, you're right at the, what do they call it, the beginning of the end of the world or something?
The beginning.
The beginning, right. And it is such an incredible place.
It is.
And with the macaw natives are just, they're a fascinating people. When I came up with Larry and stayed with his mom there for a while, we went to the museum and I was just awestruck at the courage and the tenacity of these people to live such a difficult lifestyle that probably none of us could do. You know, going out and killing whales and skinning them and building their houses out of, you know, the local woods and stuff like that. And they're just such a courageous people. And it's a really fabulous area. Just out of curiosity, have you been down to the beach where Larry took us that time with, where you have to crawl down the side of the hill?
Ah, the ropes and ladders?
Yeah.
Yes, we've been there lots of times.
Oh, I love that place.
Magical, isn't it? So magical.
Oh, it is. And then you go through that area where everything is kind of almost dead and still and eerie, and I was picking up all kinds of emanations and vibrations from, you know, things that I couldn't see, and it was almost like being in a science fiction movie.
Yes.
that was one of the best trips that I have ever had in my life. And I just will always be grateful to Larry for, you know, having taken me up to Washington State, because it's just something that there's nothing like it.
I know, it's so amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful, like too magical.
Yeah, very. Are you going to plant any fruit trees on your property with a salmon shack?
Yes, we did. We have some, I think two or three old apple trees that were there before. We had to prune them. Well, when I say we, I'm talking about our friend Sam Hobie Waters, who's doing all the gardening. And we planted an orchard of miniature ones, cherries, plums, and apples all in a row. So that's going to be really awesome when they start giving out fruit.
Oh, yeah.
And we do plan to put some more different types of trees in the property as well. Maybe get a greenhouse and get some vegetables going.
Oh, yeah. Well, I also plan on getting some more fruit trees. I've got a persimmon that's growing out there now, and an apple tree, and a jujube tree.
Oh, my gosh. That's fabulous.
And
weather's much better. You can do a lot more than we can.
There used to be a wonderful apricot tree, but it got so tall because I didn't know how to prune it that it eventually just stopped producing. But it used to be so laden with fruit. And, you know, it reminded me of when I was a kid at my grandparents' ranch. and they had all every fruit tree you can imagine, including persimmons. And it was just like a Disneyland for a little kid to just go out and pick fresh fruit off the trees. There's nothing like it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So to kind of change course a little bit, I know people will be wanting to hear a little bit about what you feel is going on in this in our world, because there is still so much that is negative, and it appears that the old paradigms are clinging to remain and even strengthen their positions. And maybe you could share a little bit about what you see about that.
I would have to say that I don't see their position as being stronger. I think it's weaker every day. And I think that they're trying to give that illusion. I mean, they own the media, right? And they own all the film companies and everything. All the mass media outlets are owned by, not all of them, but a lot of them.
Right.
And I think they're working and they're paying a lot of money to make us believe that they're strong and they're getting stronger. But in fact, they've never been so weak in their entire existence. And they're getting weaker every day, and they're on their way out. They're definitely on their way out.
Well, that's good news. I kind of see the same thing, but as you said, when you have all the money in the world, you can keep up a front, and that front can go on for a very long time and not be even remotely accurate.
Right. It's very much like that movie, The Wizard of Oz, right? Yeah, the wizard, allegedly was so powerful and this and this and the other, and it was just an old guy behind a curtain.
Right.
Not a gadget and machines, but,
Right.
Powerful. And that's very much how we are right now. But again, the focus really mustn't be directed outside of ourselves. We really have to make an effort every day to walk our talk. Really, and explore and live that higher paradigm in ourselves. So if you find yourself indulging in low frequencies like anger, righteousness, sadness, or whatever it is, fear, stress, say, hold on a minute, let me look at this, and why am I indulging in this? Oh, you'll have lots of excuses. And I say, okay, so are they really worth it? Is it really worth me fitting this planet, these energies, these emotions? It's not worth feeding the planet and our reality those emotions. So change them, right? Don't indulge in those anymore.
Right. Absolutely. And, I think you and I and many other people who live in a beautiful country setting have it a little bit easier, because even though you can't actually be off the grid, the natural beauty that surrounds us is just creates such a peaceful atmosphere, and there's so much to do outside, that is. And I've always loved working on a ranch or on property, and people who live in cities have to, punch time clocks and go to corporations and kiss ass and do all the things that are unpleasant, and that's a difficult road, I find.
Yeah, for us it's difficult, but I've met a lot of people who flourish in cities.
Right,
who really
right.
feed up the energy and love it,
Oh,
and
right.
they love the fact that they have Starbucks down the street and their gym, favorite gym is, two doors down, and that they don't have to look after a garden because they live in an apartment and their apartment is beautiful and they have indoor plants. Different people, different styles of living. Some people really love to have people around them, and put them in a forest, they will get scared.
Yeah.
They will feel miserable and they won't survive very long at all.
Right.
Put us in a forest, we'll manage, we'll make shelter, we'll be really happy and be very happy surrounded by nature. But, there's people for every location. Cities didn't evolve because everybody hated them. Cities evolved because actually the majority of people love to live surrounded by other people.
Yes.
I remember going to the beach, and there used to be these clusters, you know, of people, and then the rest of miles and miles of beach were empty. I'm thinking, wow, how is that even possible? But it does happen.
And of course, we see all kinds of stories that are inspirational, and I notice them on Facebook, and I think that's one of the values that Facebook delivers, is that people can have that sharing quality without necessarily having to live in a city. And
right.
You know, there are so many inspirational stories that can be shared and that just move you, and you see that.
Yes.
People are changing. They are doing wonderful things. There's that little girl who was 9 years old when she started growing cabbage to feed the homeless, and that her first one was something like 20 or 30 pounds, and she's 19 now, and she's started a whole movement. And they're, you know, she's teaching people how to do their, you know, how to start their movement, and it's all about feeding the homeless and growing vegetables, and I mean, it's turned into a huge enterprise.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it is true, isn't it? I mean, that's amazing. And Facebook is a very, very, very graphic example of staying within our integrity and seeing what we engage in. If we clickbait onto negative stuff and drama and fear, that's all we're going to see there. But if we actually look out, search for, and only click on the inspirational, beautiful stories, that is what our experience is going to be in Facebook. So, yeah, that's a very, very good example.
I remember once you told me that to get on to Twitter, which I did, you said it was faster. And I didn't understand what you meant, but I can get lost on Twitter very easily. It's really quite a fascinating journey being on there and, you know, being able to communicate or read about people that you admire and want to follow. And there's just something for everybody. So I have to force myself to stay off Facebook and Twitter because I won't get anything done outside if I get on them. It's a magnet.
Right. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, I like Instagram and Twitter. Yeah.
I don't know about what is Instagram.
I just don't get it. So
I have never played with Instagram before. It's probably a good thing.
Right. Yeah. Well, I like photography. I'm a professional photographer, so I love photography. I love images, and when I have time, I just love to share the images that I create. And
oh yeah.
Put them up there. And then you have a feed, and then, you know, the feed comes up other beautiful photographs, and I also enjoy the people's photography, you know. So yeah, it's really fascinating. I love Instagram. A lot of my friends left Instagram because it was bought by Facebook, and Facebook was being out of integrity, so they left Facebook and Instagram.
Oh.
So now they only have Twitter. So now I have to spend more time in Twitter to stay with them.
Well, it does seem like there have been some new entries that have popped up periodically, but they don't seem to hold on very long, or they don't seem to hit the mark where people are just totally aware of them and shifting like droves to those venues.
No, that's true. The other alternatives have tried to set off for quite a while, but yeah, they don't quite work out. I don't really spend that much time on them because I have my own empowerment platform with many, many, many amazing people. And that's where I hang out online, you know. It's like, platform is like walkwithmenow.com that has a private forum, and, you know, that's where we hang out. And if I have something really interesting to discuss, that's where I put it. And these individuals are very, very, very talented and awake, or even learning and interested. You know, they're interested and interesting.
Yes,
what they have to say is very positive, you know. So that's where I like to hang out. So, you know, if you want to find me online, just go to Walk With Me Now, and you'll find me there. Because, yeah, I spend very little time on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, even though I like Instagram for the photographs.
Huh.
I don't have time there.
I'll have to look into that briefly and see what it's about. So what's next for you in terms of any kind of group or event that you're going to be hosting there in Washington State? Is there something coming up?
No, I'm not actually planning any more retreats this year. I mean, one might happen. It's very flowy, you know. It's like I don't plan them ahead or anything. It just comes up and I get like a request from the Human Collective or Gaia. You know, let's have a retreat. And, you know, so many people, and I do them like between 5 and 8 people nowadays, because I find that's the optimum for the maximum benefit for everybody involved. And but we did one this year already, and we haven't really planned on doing any more. But I don't know if that request is going to come back this year. It seems to be morphing and changing. What I'm really enjoying right now is the mentorship stuff. I have a few mentorees, and we basically work very, very, very closely together to achieve their goals, their personal goals, and intents. And I've had, since I started last year, I think it was, or this year, I can't remember, I have one graduate, and the rest are, you know, very close to graduating. And
oh,
I have
wonderful.
A waiting list, you know, so that's the type of thing that I'm really enjoying. And one of the things that the commitment that they have to make is to spend a few days or a week in at the Shaman Shack. So basically, I keep it open for the mentorees rather than events and things.
Wow.
But one never knows, you know. happening.
Right, right. We have just a couple of minutes left, and I thought, you know, I'd leave that open for you to just share whatever you want to share or mention anything you want to mention.
Mm. So going back to the book, The 13th Mage, one of the things I wanted to share is that one of the items of information that is not broadly shared, but it's known by the Human Collective, and when you feel that energy, you'll find, if you test it out, this information, it probably resonate with you too, Lance, is that one of the special things about this planet is that humans didn't evolve here. They did not evolve on the planet Earth. They were placed here from different planets. And there are multiple planets with human beings where they evolved and grew, but they were closed source. So basically, they couldn't mix among each other. When they came here, many, many of the histories around the planet is about gods bringing humans and putting them somewhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
Putting them here. And what was different was that the human beings here on the planet, and what's very special, is that we're open sourced. So yes, we can be genetically tweaked by others, but also by ourselves. We can tweak our own physical body's DNA. And also the programming and the limitations and the skills are all open, so we can basically do anything as a species, but also singularly while we are here, while we are in these lifetimes. And it's an experiment that started many, probably 2-3 tens of thousands of years ago here, and has been quite successful, very successful. The interest also came from other species that came over to tweak us and to add their DNA, to take our DNA. And that is creating an interspecies mix of multidimensionality, which means that we can actually now affect other species as well. And I don't think they were prepared for that. I don't think they knew that was going to happen. It took them by surprise. But definitely, and the very unique aspect of a human being is that it is a physical body, but also a soul. A soul, and what is a soul? To me, soul is not just a viewpoint, but a very subtle body that, because the human body has been tweaked, can live within a human body. And that's why when our physical body dies, we continue, right?
Mm.
Our physical body expression does continue also, but in a different format, is different. we can incarnate in many, many different dimensions and many different forms. Our physical body elementals can only incarnate as they evolve into more and more subtle forms, but as they are right now, they're quite solid. But we help them, we can actually make them less solid and more flexible, and actually can tweak and program them. So that's some of the things that I wanted to share.
Well, that's wonderful. I totally agree with you, too, about that. And I think we're going to begin seeing that happening all over the place. Well, Anelia, I hate to have to end the conversation, but we're out of time. And I just wanted to thank you for coming back. And I just love you dearly. And I'm so glad that we had a chance to catch up on things.
Yes. Love you, too. Bye.
Okay. Take care of those chickens.
Okay.
All right. Good night.
Night.